Sarah Carradine, podcasting from Aora, Sydney.
I'm Mari Forth.
And this is Crime Scene, the True Crime Review podcast where we get to the heart of how true crime stories are told. You can get this fine program along with all the other fantastic reality TV content by subscribing to robhasawebsite.com/rahapupsfeed. That's R-H-A-P-U-P-S feed.
We'd love it if you would subscribe to our feed. Please go to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed. You'll get your true crime on Tuesdays. If you've already subscribed, thank you very much. Last week, we watched Can I Tell You a Secret on Netflix with Matt Scott. Sarah, what did we watch this week?
We watched Me Hereafter, a four-episode series from ABC News Studios, and we've covered several properties from them, not seven, but several. Death in the Dorms, which, Mari, we both gave four magnifying glasses to. Uh-huh. Web of Death, which you gave 3.5, and our guest Grace Leader and I gave 3. Killing County, which our guest AJ Norris and you, Mari, gave 4.5, and I gave 5. And Pretty Baby, which our guest Chantal Francis gave 4 and you and I gave 3.5 to. So we are coming to Me Hereafter with very high expectations, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so.
And speaking of high expectations, we are joined by one of our favourite guests, making her fourth appearance, one more and you get a mug. It's Katie from A Date with Dateline podcast. Hey, Katie.
Hello, thank you for having me. I was not aware of the mug. I'm even more excited to be here now. Can't wait.
It's an imaginary mug.
I'm excited to get an honorary mug, which is not actually a mug, just statement that I've received it. That's fine. Yes. I'm fine with that.
So, Katie, you join us for some fairly dark material, it has to be said. Stolen Youth, which we all like very much, but is a tough sit. Death by Fame and Look Into My Eyes. I think we all liked those all pretty well. Death by Fame now has a season 2, Mari. I believe you've watched it.
Yeah, I've watched a few episodes and it's honestly just as good as the first season. They still managed to find cases that I had never heard of that literally happen in Hollywood to famous people. I'm like, how do you guys do this? And they present it in such a great way. So, kudos to Death by Fame and season 2.
So let's get to Me Hereafter. It's a four-episode series. As I said, each episode is a standalone case. The filmmakers have made an intriguing choice to have the murder victim be the narrator, voiced by an actor, of course. In episode 1, She Stole My Baby, Indigenous woman Savannah Greywind is kidnapped by her upstairs neighbour when 8 months pregnant. Brooke Cruz, the neighbour, performed a violent caesarean section to remove Savannah's baby. Savannah died. Then Cruz and her boyfriend William Hain dumped Savannah's body in the Red River. Cruz pled guilty to conspiracy to commit kidnapping, conspiracy to commit murder, and was convicted to life without parole. And William was convicted of lying to the police, which I actually didn't know was a crime, and kidnapping, and was sentenced to 20 years. Through the efforts of her parents, Noberta and Joe and others, Savannah's Act was passed in North Dakota, allowing transparency through state and tribal jurisdictions about actual numbers of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit people. In episode 2, A Message, A Murder, Monique Bau is kidnapped and shot so that her killers can take her house key. They then went to her mother's home to kill Monique's partner, Momo. He was shot several times but survived. Envy over Momo's financial and creative success as a rapper motivated fellow rapper and previous collaborator, LA, Lyndon Wiggins, to hire Cedric Berry and Barry Davis for the job, as well as involving his partner and former parole officer, Elsa Segura. All four were convicted and sentenced to life in prison. In episode 3, Seen at the Mall, Kira Stager is killed by her husband because she wanted to end their marriage. He put her in the Mississippi River, which Katie's podcast partner, Kimberly, has fallen into.
Correct.
Luckily, she came out. Kira was trapped under the ice. The trial of her husband, Jeff Trevino, went ahead despite there being no body. The case looked very shaky, but she was found in time for a conviction. Trevino is currently serving 27 and a half years in prison. And finally, in episode 4, the funeral home murders, pedophile priest Ryan Erickson shot and killed funeral director Dan O'Connell, along with his intern Jimmy Ellison, to prevent his secret being exposed. And yes, Erickson did officiate at their funerals. With law enforcement closing in, Erickson hung himself publicly at the church on Easter Sunday so everybody arriving could see him. Despite this, there was a John Doe hearing in front of a judge to determine if there would have been enough evidence to convict Erickson. The judge made a probable case finding, saying Erickson's guilt was beyond a reasonable doubt, a 10 out of 10 certainty. I've never heard of this kind of hearing, so I'm really looking forward to talking about that when we get to episode 4. But Katie, why don't you start us off? What were your thoughts overall? And I'm particularly interested in what you thought about this device of having the victim be the narrator.
Oh, I don't know if I should be first, because I wasn't sure how I felt about it, honestly. I was a little put off when it started. I'm not sure why. I've been really thinking about why it sort of bothered me. It could be because it's too personal. It could be because it adds a layer that I wasn't comfortable with. That's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. It could also be that it clearly isn't that person's voice, right? And I think mm-hmm. I'm also very aware of it being a voiceover. And so I don't know. There was something about it that put me off a little bit. I got used to it, honestly, by the end of the first episode, but still there was something about it that I don't know why, but I just don't think it's for me. I couldn't figure out what it was about it that it wasn't for me, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very interesting thing to dive into. Mari, what did you think about that victim as narrator, voiced by an actor and obviously written by writers who are not the victim?
Yeah, I agree with Katie. Like, ID Discovery tried this with another series. I cannot remember the name of it, but I remember it was from like a long time ago. It's on the tip of my tongue. I'm pretty sure some of our listeners know exactly what I'm talking about. Reach out to us, let us know. But they've tried this before, this device before, where the victim is telling the story from their eyes and stuff like that. And it's interesting. It truly is. I completely understand what Katie's saying. It's like, it's a level of close, a manufactured level of closeness that I think will be polarizing. I truly think you'll either like this storytelling device or you won't. Mm-hmm. I tried for it not to get in the way for me. I think by the like middle episodes, that, correct me if I'm wrong, let me know what you guys think, but it felt like they kind of did less and less of it as the series went on. So I think that was kind of good. Like I think they did the intros, like they did a lot of intros for the victims of like setting up the story. I think they closed out with the victim narration thing. But I don't think it's as throughout as probably like that first episode. Like that first episode, I really felt like they had us, they were overdoing it with Savannah. So I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
I must say, I was looking forward to this series. As the listeners know, we liked the other ABC News Studios properties very much. If it hadn't been ABC News Studios, the premise alone would have made me not watch it.
Wow.
I did not like the idea of it, because unless you're reading writings of the person, yes. Uh-huh. Unless you have video diaries, unless you are super careful to involve the families,
yeah,
and say, please read this. Does this sound like her voice? Each of us has such a distinct idiolect, not just the way we speak, but the manner and the use of words is so intrinsic to ourselves that I was concerned. On the other hand, I come from a theatre background, theatre and opera background, so I love the theatricality of it. I loved the beginning, gave me chills, where Savannah was talking about being nailed into her makeshift coffin. And I liked Kira under the ice. I think it was the most effective in the first episode because the actor playing Savannah did the least acting. She just spoke. And it felt to me like it was very heartfelt. It didn't feel inauthentic. I found the other three, not their fault. They're given this job. Who knows what information they have? Who knows what the directors are telling them? I found the other three, there was just a little bit too much acting going on. You know, voice acting is very, very different from other things, other types of acting. But I also found episode one to be the best for me episode. So it may be that I've folded in my opinion of the narrator into how much I liked this episode. Liked is the wrong word. I was very moved and very sad, sort of moving on a little bit to how the episodes go. It was very quiet and it was very simple. And we spoke to her parents. We spoke to a police sergeant who he never said it, but we know is haunted to this day, that he walked past her body three times and didn't find her, that he walked past her baby three times and didn't find her. I thought this is like the hell of Sam Bowman, he could have also been called. And his quietness and his thoughtfulness I thought were very appreciated. So I liked that. They do use some news footage. That's a little bit of a shock because you get that news sound and it all gets a bit. But there was so little of it in this one. I really liked that. So, Mari, aside from the narration, what were your thoughts on episode one?
Episode one, I did like that they focused a lot on the missing Indigenous women. I think that making that a point was really good because, you know, sometimes stuff like that can be glossed over. This episode was fascinating to me because I'm like, how you really be like, how do y'all think y'all gonna get away with this? You straight up went downstairs, asked her to come and follow you upstairs, and then she don't go back to her family. Why do you think that you're gonna get away with that? But then the fact that they kind of got away with it for three searches was astounding to me. So it was very interesting. It was a case I didn't know. I mean, stolen baby cases are literally, I feel like there's so many I've heard of. It's so sad. But I thought this was done with like delicate care. I liked hearing from her family. I think her family is what really drove this home, hearing from them, hearing how this affected them, but also the spirit to keep going because they had her daughter. We saw her daughter at the end. It was, you know, it was very touching and very moving. I don't think it was my favorite episode, but I thought it was a great starting point.
Katie, we always say here, criminals, be stupid, please. They strongly suspected, but had nothing, they being the police. And then William is seen going to Walmart, the murderer's shop, and buying newborn nappies. I mean, I like procedurals. This wasn't heavy on the procedure, but they led you through to say, well, we looked at tapes, we saw him go to Walmart, we found out what he bought. What did you think about this very strange plan that they had? I mean, they say they couldn't believe the baby didn't cry as the police broke down the door finally in the third raid.
I think also myself, as and I'm guessing a lot of other people who are watching it, are filled with dread at the fact that the baby isn't making noise. Why isn't the baby making noise? I was very, very scared. I think what's happening here is not so much let the criminals are dumb, but they mentioned it briefly that they had some issues surrounding addiction, and I think that that's what we're seeing here fully, because the plan is bananas. The plan to go downstairs and do this, that It took a little bit of planning, but really they just kind of got lucky. It wasn't planned well at all. And she's 2 weeks past her due date at the time that they've decided to go ahead and go through with this. Also, sorry, the unfairness here of William, of the boyfriend who's just sitting in on the bed every time they come in to search. Exactly. Number one, that's so suspicious.
Right. In the same spot twice. I would have been like, get up.
And is that officer not asking his name and then immediately running to see if he has any outstanding warrants? Because that's a real quick way to get him up right there. Forget four searches in right then. Mm-hmm. First one, you're running his name and saying, can I check your ID?
Well, you know, he did have a warrant and he has a history of child abuse. So,
immediately there's some questions. The first search, right? Just with his name. So this was a little bit frustrating for me, but the family is amazing in this. It made me so angry. The fact that Brooke and William used the dad. They used her close relationship with her father, Savannah's relationship with him, to be like, he was knocking on the door. They tried to shift the blame that way. And I just, that makes me upset. And I don't know. I thought the dad was a wonderful interview.
I wrote down, Brooke Cruz weaponizing police against a brown man, saying she was fearful of him, saying she was frightened, and then saying, if you keep coming back, which he did, as why wouldn't he? Because Norberta knew exactly what had happened, right down to the removal of the baby.
Oh, she did, yes.
She knew. And she said, if you come back, I'm calling the police. And Joe even very calmly saying, well, I knew what that meant. I knew if the police came, there would be an arrest and it wouldn't be her.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. This couple. Sorry.
Very frustrating. Because, like, they even thought that they were going to, like, raise that baby, like, opposite. Like, right. That family is right there. That family is right below you. Y'all are in this small little house. It's not even an apartment complex. It is literally a house divided into units. And you thought you were going to really completely raise a whole baby and nobody would be suspicious? Like, come on, man.
Not having been pregnant.
Right. Or done the fake pregnancy.
She didn't even do the pillow.
Oh, my God.
I thought that they were perhaps going to do a midnight flit. And I thought, well, Savannah is in the chest of drawers. Are they going to get a U-Haul and move and just say, oh, we're moving because we feel we don't feel safe living above this violent Indigenous man. That's them. Ooh. That's them. That is not me. But I thought, that's how they're going to. So the baby's this is what I thought. I thought the baby, if alive, I hope, is somewhere else. And they are going to say that they're moving. And then they're going to go what was their plan? They didn't have a plan. And yet she managed to get that baby out safely with a box cutter.
Horrible.
That's a miracle. That baby was supposed to be on this earth. Yes. That little girl is very special. And I hope that she's told that every day. And I'm sure she is because it seems like she's got a family that's really pulling for her, which is good.
She was so cute. She was so cute. Know?
Yeah.
And Savannah's law, of course, comes from this. So I don't ever like to say, something good came of it. But something good did come of it. But the better thing would be that this hadn't happened and you wouldn't need that law.
Yeah.
Here they do bring in the broader societal aspects, which I liked. And we've complained before, Mari, about documentaries that only tell the story. Mm-hmm. They're not heavy-handed, but they are placing it very much in a historical and societal context, which I liked very much.
And not knowing anything about this entire series, I actually thought that the whole series was going to be about missing Indigenous women. That's what I thought every episode was going to be about. And I was like, okay, this is great. Then I was very surprised when we get to episode two. I was like, actually, no, not at all. So these are just four very different stories is sort of what we're doing. Okay.
That seems to be ABC Studios, like their bag. They find four cases, they put them under a general theme and presentation, and package them like this. Yeah, so
Okay.
So far, so good. They've done a pretty good job.
There we go. All right. I like it.
Well, let's move on to A Message of Murder and the killing of Monique Bao, mother to two girls, getting her real estate chops, and she's lured to a house showing in order to be kidnapped and killed for the key. Mari, what did you think about this episode?
This was my favorite episode, mostly because the case was so twisty and turny. I had no idea where it was going. And then Monique's passing was incredibly sad. Again, like I don't like the narration portion, but I do like how I feel like it is enhancing me knowing the victim, even if it's inauthentic. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like it's inauthentic because not much of this is in their words. You know what I'm saying? But I still felt for her. I felt for her in those moments, in those last moments and stuff like that. And her mom, oh my God, her mom just being so heartbroken once she hears about her daughter. But just this like freaking like action movie style. I don't even know how the police would have come to this, how they came to this conclusion. Like I do, because they walked us through it, which is great. And I do love the procedural aspect, but it was mind blowing to me. I didn't see how it was ending. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought it was very, very interesting.
Yes, Wanda, her mother, was incredibly impressive. Mm-hmm. Just what a woman, what she went through. Again, she's now, you know, she now has grandchildren to raise. Yeah. And right at the end, Mark Suchter, who's a police sergeant in Minneapolis, pretty straightforward, bluff police officer, you know, pretty stern, but telling a story. And at the end, he's almost in tears and he says, "I would never have done this show, but Wanda asked me to." Mm. And just that little glimpse that you get into these odd relationships that happen strangely and this way between a police officer and the mother of a murdered girl. And he was the one that told her, and he was the one that held her after she heard the news. It was, I hadn't really picked that up. And then to have him, it didn't finish on him, but he was right at the end talking about his admiration for Wanda. Katie, how did this episode strike you?
It was also the one that I hate to say enjoyed, but I really, this story really got me. And I don't know if it was the voiceover aspect as much as this was. It was, first of all, they're all unfair. All murder is unfair. This was unnecessary. They sort of go over that at the end, but this, oh my goodness. And also, the kidnapping aspect to this, it was fascinating that there's several crimes happening here. And then they kept showing the nails. There was something about that was so personal that the press-on nails kept falling off. And then at the end, you see her, and obviously she took such good care of her hand. That's something that you're doing because you're speaking with your hands and she's got this new career going. It feels like I know that person. Like, I know that sort of, you know, I'm switching to this new career and I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna do well. And so she's put together, and then they do that duct tape with the roll at the end. They roll that gorilla tape around her hands, and that was also what got them the fingerprints, thing. But it felt like, I don't know, it was like insulting for them to do that to this thing that she had tried to make beautiful. There was something about it that got me on all the levels.
I almost felt like she was leaving breadcrumbs almost.
And she was smart. She's what you want. You know, what I hope that I would have the wherewithal to do, which I don't know if I would, but she seemed like she was, right? Thinking of time, like the 5 o'clock, like, okay, I've got to call this out in the time for my babies. Was it Legacy and Legend? Is that which I
Legend,
just, that's adorable.
They said they figured that she was kidnapped around 3 o'clock, but the second, the attempted murder didn't happen until closer to six, like between 5:30 and six. Mm-hmm. And her mother thought that like she held out for at least 2 hours on giving them her key, because all they wanted from her was her key to get into the house so that they could kill Momo. And she held out for 2 hours. We don't know what she endured, because she knew that if they went at a certain time, which was around 5:30, that her girls would be asleep and that hopefully they would be able to be out of harm's way, which is just like, as and a they mother were. Myself, yeah, and they were. Were, yep,
yeah.
That took me. That just completely took me out of it. I was definitely done after hearing all that, and mm-hmm. it just shows the strength that she had.
Yeah,
and then just to be dispatched the way she was over a stupid, silly rap beef between rappers that nobody knows about. Nobody knows these rappers. They're not even mid-level. Momo, we see Momo on here. You know, it was nice to hear from her partner. He really did seem to like really miss her and all that. And I can't imagine the type of guilt that he's living through. But like all of this because of jealousy over people's rap careers, and it's just annoying. It's such righteous indignation that her life ended over something so petty and stupid,
and that she didn't need to be involved in it at all.
Right.
Like, I mean, exactly what he says at the end, that he says,
know where I
you
want,
could have taken me
I
out
am.
In front of a club.
Yeah. You could have kicked the door down. Like, it's not like it was
right.
You know what car I drive, you know where I am, you know I'm going to be at the club, you know all my movements, because it was someone that knew him.
Yeah.
So why did that happen then? Why do we think that happened then?
My guess would be that the Lyndon Wiggins, the rapper LA, who hired these two guys, I think he hired two guys that he didn't realize how bloodthirsty and vicious they were. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't think he went in there being like, kill anybody you have to kill the one guy I want you to kill. But I think he hired two guys who had really long rap sheets, I believe. But mm-hmm. I think he just hired two people who thought that they were the smartest criminals, who didn't care, who got into their way. They used Lyndon Wiggins' girlfriend, a former parole officer. Like, girl, you, oh my God. Ooh,
well,
oh my
you're
God.
In jail now, Elsa. So done.
Yeah, like I honestly think he hired the wrong people, and they just did not care. They didn't care who they were gonna get through to, and they were just very bloodthirsty. Honestly.
But again, procedurally, I mean, this Gorilla Tape. I mean, Gorilla Tape takes your skin off. So even if someone was to live, it's a very violent thing to do to someone. Mm-hmm. But Barry Davis does his murder shop at Walmart. Poor Walmart.
What? Wally World.
But
there's so many cameras at Walmart. Figure it out. Yes. There's cameras everywhere at Walmart. You're never getting out of there. A hoodie does not protect you. I'm so sorry. It's just not enough. You need an umbrella. Two umbrellas.
They like staked her house out because they knew where her cameras were too. Like, I really think they did this because they thought they were in some stupid movie, to be quite honest.
And they didn't even get the right person. I guarantee you, whatever the money, the payment was, it wasn't for her. It was for him. He's alive.
He's alive. Folks. Exactly.
My gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Look, I agree. It certainly was a very close second for me to the first episode. I think these first two were the most effective. I think for me, the stories were immediately engaging.
Yeah.
The photographs of these two young women, very moving to see them, like, never light up a room, but they were both, you know, they were both full of life and so full of ideas about their lives, their children, their partners, love, family. Mm-hmm. I think both of them had that theme going through.
Yeah.
So, Katie, I didn't quite consciously think that it was going to be about missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls and Two-Spirit people, but I think I did. And so when it was Monique, I thought, oh, it's not, but it's about young women on the brink of their life.
being... I thought that as well. Then I thought that, and then I was also proven wrong.
And then we get to Keira Stager. What did you... This was a... Look, I liked her speaking from under the ice, and the mm-hmm. image of it was very claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. This actor, probably directed to be so... There was just so much acting going on. It really took... I felt it... For me, it was the most inauthentic narration. Katie, what did you think about Scene at the Mall, the story of Keira Stager trying to leave her husband?
This was the closest to a Dateline episode.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah. I would say. So this is a story that I'm really, a really sad story, but I'm sadly really familiar with it because it's the most dangerous time for a woman when she's leaving mm-hmm. her partner. I mean, it's really, this happens and it's awful. This one, I thought we were going to get a twist that we did not get.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think, I'm not alone.
They set it up like you thought there was going to be a twist. Yeah.
Yeah. This was really sad. They also, I don't know. This was the hardest, I think, because I'm familiar with this story. Unfortunately, this was the hardest, the most difficult for me to engage with this story, and especially coming on the heels of Monique, which I was very, very invested in. Yeah. I was trying, but it, which is sad because all of this is sad. This is, she did not deserve to be killed by any means, but for some reason, this one felt a little different.
Yeah. For me, for instance, I zoomed through 1 and 2, like 1 and 2, mm-hmm. I watched back to back, started 3, and I was like, okay, I'll come back to this. I think I fell asleep. And then it took me a few times to get through episode 3. And you will, I'll, straight up with the listeners, y'all will not hear me talking about episode 4 because I didn't, I did not watch it. So like, this one, just like Katie said, it was like, at first I was like, oh, okay. So it might be something like, oh, it might, you know, it might be different than what we thought. And it's like, no, it was definitely the husband. It's always uh-huh. the husband, but uh-huh. not just that. What I realized, I don't know if I realized if it, like halfway through or whatever, but she did not have the same, her family did not show up for her like Savannah and Monique's did. She just had her sister and her sister, I feel like her sister wasn't there from the beginning. I don't know. Sarah would know more than I would. It truly felt to me that her sister came in, was introduced like midway through. And I think because her sister, unfortunately, is just so young, I don't want to say it wasn't as impactful, but we literally had all of Savannah's family, her mother, sure. her dad, like, same with Monique's mother, like it, her
Monique's cousins. Yeah, cousins. Like those women, come on.
Those women were, yes, amazing. And so incredible. Like, this is probably where I think we got to know the victim the least, almost in a sense. So it just wasn't as engaging, but definitely like Katie said, this was the procedural. This was the step-by-step. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, they all have their step-by-steps, but this one felt very heavy-handed with the step-by-step. And this was the only one where I was like, this feels long.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I just thought, after the intense engagement of the first two, for me, mm-hmm. so what I was trying to figure out a theme. I was trying to feel engaged. That's a very insightful, Mari. No family. I mean, we do have her sister, no other family. Mm-hmm. Speaking for her, not even the lover of mm-hmm. Keira. All murders are stupid and wrong and sad.
Yeah.
But I wonder why you would put the might of the ABC news studios, who we know can produce really nuanced, really exquisite, really engaging work. I don't know why that is on this case. So I kept thinking, mm-hmm. the boy downstairs who said he didn't hear anything. Is there going to be some mm-hmm. kind of coercion of him by the older man he looked up to? So that was all set up. They met through gaming. He was much younger. He looked up to the killer. And he didn't have anything to do with it and didn't hear anything. And that was nothing. So I sort of felt a little blue balls about it.
I have one idea. I think that maybe that the power of ABC, whatever, they figured that actually the item in this case that is the most fascinating was that her being under the ice in a body of water that is not the body of water where other evidence is presenting. Like that part of the story to me was engaging and really fascinating. Like, oh, and then she's found in, and then having her be in an area so close to where the prosecutor's office is. Was it the prosecutor's or the lead detective's office that her body could have been just, you know, yards away? That sort of idea, I think, seemed maybe more impactful than it actually ended up being compared to these other two stories, unfortunately. Does that make sense?
And the body to
play bigger.
And the body not like being found like midway through the trial or something like that as well.
That was intense. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, for me, I thought all of the footage was what I found very interesting. Like basically his every move was on footage. I found that very interesting.
And the pistachios, luminol for the win. Pistachios for the win. I did like that. I felt it belonged thematically and tonally in a different series because there's a question about, well, when did she die? And they got the chef from the restaurant to make the meal that she had eaten. What is this on it? Ground pistachios. They're in her stomach. They know she died that night. Mm-hmm. So I liked all of that. It wasn't that the case is uninteresting. It's just I struggled to place it, thematically and tonally in this series.
It was too much smoke and mirrors. I think it was too much smoke and mirrors to kind of stretch it out. The whole segment about, oh, could this have been a serial killer? With all these young women have gone missing around the same time, and they're all around the same age. And then 10 minutes later, nope, it wasn't. This is what happened to each one of those women.
I just knew because the ages were so different. There was a 16-year-old girl, and Kira's not 16. Yeah. She was an older girl. So let's go to the funeral home murders. This one,
totally different.
Totally different.
Different than all of them.
I knew it was the priest straight away, so I thought, oh, okay, what's the twist? The twist is that it's not the priest. And they dragged it out that it was the priest, you know, like, and then they dumped it's the priest. And I said, yes, I know. I knew the minute you mentioned him that it was the priest.
We know. Mm-hmm.
And so I think the time division for me, Katie, wasn't as it should have been. There was a lot of time on just getting to the moment that it was the priest rather mm-hmm. than delving into, okay, it was the priest. Now let's look at the fact that there was an investigation on him by the church when he was in the seminary and the church investigated its own and said there was no wrongdoing. Where have we heard that a million times before? Right. The bravery of Thomas. There was a whole lot of material there that, I don't know, sort of the balance was wrong.
Agreed.
And then when he kills himself so publicly, it's like, well, can we talk about that? That the parishioners are going to arrive to this church for Mass on Easter Sunday. He displayed himself in an attempt to be in control even of the ending of his life. And
his narcissist. I'm not going to diagnose, pretty rough. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, and again, you know, I wrote down police interviewed 2,000 people, except for Father Ryan Frickin Erickson. I bloody knew it. So, Katie, what did you think overall about this episode?
I sometimes go down rabbit holes with things. And interestingly, I just rewatched the movie Spotlight last week.
Love it.
So when this came up, I was like, oh, okay, I'm on it. And then I watched another documentary called, I believe it's called Deliver Us From Evil. And
yes.
I just sort of go down.
I remember watching that as a kid.
It's intense. Oh.
Yes. It's from like, it's from at least like 15 years ago, maybe.
It's not new.
Yeah.
I'll put these in the show notes, side recommendation, mm-hmm. Spotlight and Deliver Us From Evil.
And I would just say, I could not agree more with the time issue that you had. The stuff that, but also then I felt like I was being a little biased, to be honest, because I am very current on this issue right now, because this is the, I am just out of this rabbit hole. So I think I was like, yes, we know all this, but I did think we could have had a few more victim or survivor, however you want to refer to yourself, impact. Mm-hmm. I think that there are other stories here regarding this priest. And so we could have very, very quickly gotten to the fact that we know it's him. I think you're totally right. We could have very quickly gone to that. And then 100% at the end, spend more time interviewing parishioners that go to that church, what that impact was like with mm-hmm. the display.
I don't know.
It was... I do understand, though, we did get some time with Dan O'Connell's family, and then I don't feel like we got to know James Ellison hardly at all.
Oh, I know. Wrong? Lost in the shuffle. That was my other critique. It's like, Dan. Oh, and James, of course. Oh, and James.
Yeah, that's not fair. That's like the OJ. James. That's like Nicole Simpson. And then we just forget that someone else was there. That's not right.
Ugh. Yeah. Yes. When Sarah said, I had tried rewatching it, and Sarah was like, you don't have to watch it. I was like, great. Because it feels like ABC News Studios, you know, for all of the praises that we've given it, has done this. Remember Sarah, I believe we thought Web of Death was like, had two or three stories that were really good, and then like two that weren't. Death in the Dorms, I know for a fact that we liked
three of the four. It's like, just make the good ones. The thing that's fascinating for me about the case were a couple of things. One is something that we all know: the police hold back certain details about the murder from the press, so that if somebody knows those details, they are probably the murderer. And that's one of the ways that they had to get him in their sights. And once they did, the blindness of not interviewing him when they interviewed 2,000 other people, someone who's in that funeral home every 5 minutes, is astonishing.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
But the very interesting thing for me was this John Doe hearing. Do you know about this, Katie Murray?
I've never heard of this before.
Essentially trying someone who's dead.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I've never heard of that.
That's for the victims' families, I'm assuming.
It's for the victims' families and to close, and so that the case is closed. Because when a suspect dies without being convicted, and the police were completely convinced it was them, police can be wrong, we know, they can't investigate the case anymore because they feel and believe that they have the correct person. But that case is always open because there's no, this person was found guilty and was said to have done it. So I thought this was very creative and flexible for the American justice system to come up with this. I mean, I'm assuming it's just this state. I don't know that.
That's my question.
It
might be just that state, but I'm now, and had I been a good guest, I would have Googled how many other states do. I'm not sure, but it is the first time it's come across my purview. I didn't know that this was a thing at all.
Yeah. So something to do some research on.
Yeah. And then sorry, you mentioned, what was the other thing that you mentioned that was interesting?
The withholding of information about the murder.
Why couldn't they? Sorry, they did not arrest him at that point, though.
No.
Why? That's not enough. You've done that, and he's given you information that he shouldn't know. Click, click.
And
arrest him.
And we see the interrogation, and they say to him, "How do you think it happened? Where do you think people were?" And he didn't say, "I don't know. How would I know?" He said, "Well, I imagine," and then he described it. It's like, God does not like Ryan Erickson telling you that. He left a note asking for masses to be said for his soul's rest. I don't believe in the afterlife.
Oh my God.
But Ryan Erickson does, and literally, there's no rest. There is no rest for him.
I don't think they did it either. I bet you they didn't do it. No one did it.
I did have a flash. It was so interesting how there are things that you know, but you don't know, you know, if you follow. And mm-hmm. when I was a young teen, young and mid-teen girl, where my house was in the suburbs, several houses along and sort of stretching in an L behind our house, was a retreat for Catholic priests. And that was what I knew about it. It was a retreat for Catholic priests. And
a retreat.
That's just what it was. And now I think, suddenly watching this, I thought, oh, I know what that place was.
That
was the naughty priest's house. That's where they sent the naughty priests.
To wait until they're reassigned to a different,
It's the naughty corner. Go and think about what you did and then we'll reassign you elsewhere. Amazing. I'm convinced. Now I have to do research on that as well. So let's get to our ratings. Katie, what do you give the series overall or individual episodes? You can rate it as you like.
Oh, this is so hard for me. I'm going to give the first two 4 easily.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first two, they're very different than the second two. But the second two, I'm giving like a 2 or a 2.5. Uh-huh. So I don't know what that average is. I was a theater major, so math is not for me. Not for me at all. But I think also I would have liked to have been contacted about these voiceovers because this seemed like a very like heartfelt gig. But I also wonder if the people that did the voiceovers were able to talk to the families, because I would have insisted on it. Insisted. Just a little bit of research.
Writing, you know, in the voicing. I could not agree more. So we're going to say 4, 4, 2.5, 2.5. I think we can divide it like that, because I think we all have the same, a similar feeling. Oh, Mari, perfect. What's your magnifying glass situation on this series?
I completely agree with those takes. I hate when I'm like, yeah, we all give it the same thing. But honestly, both of those first two 4s, I wouldn't give them 5s just because, again, the mechanism, it's kind of wonky. But those two carried the mechanism that that they chose. The last two didn't. The last two was not enhanced by the mechanism they chose, and the last two felt clunky in comparison. So I'll average it out for the whole series and just say 3-ish. 3-ish.
I love an ish. I'm going to say the first two for me were 4.5 and would have been 5 if it had not been for the narration. I think I found the narration of the first two less troublesome than the two of you did. Mm-hmm. But the narration in the second pair was overbearing, actorish, inauthentic.
Unnecessary.
And I was annoyed at it. So, you know.
Right.
But it seems like such a distinct difference, you know. As I've said, I think the calmness of that first one was so moving that the filmmakers were just letting us sit with her family, and the intensity of our distress in the second one was beautifully managed. I didn't feel manipulated. I felt a righteous anger and along with Wanda and her family. And the second two, I thought, all right. So I'm not going to average it. I'm going to say 4.5, 4.5, 2, 2.
Yeah. They really, it's so amazing how in the first two, it really feels like they let the story play out. While in the last two, it felt like they tried to really throw in some twists, throw in some look over here, look over there, you know, very interesting.
Yes, there was simplicity from the earlier ones that was missing in the second two, I think.
There's nothing wrong with just focusing on the same kind of story, because we were engaged in the first two, so you don't have to vary it wildly. You know, now we're going to have this kind of a case and this kind of a case. No, stick with these cases, because we're interested and we're here and we're engaged. And instead it's like, well, we need to do very, very different things for all 4. Don't think you need to do that at all.
So if you've got this far without watching the shows, I think you can say that all our recommendations would be to watch the first and second episode and decide that it is a 2-episode limited series.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Katie, what do you have to recommend to our listeners? What have you been reading, watching, or listening to that you've enjoyed lately?
Well, we just did a book club for A Date with Dateline, and we did it on Lay Them to Rest, which is a book by Laura Norton, who also hosts the podcast The Fall Line. It's a great book. If you haven't picked it up or read it, she did a fantastic job. So I would definitely recommend that. And also, if you haven't seen Spotlight, it's a fictional retelling of a very true thing that happened in the Boston Globe's coverage of the Catholic Church in the early 2000s, but it's a fascinating movie and it will take you on a rabbit hole. So if you're interested in that topic, there's some knowledge out there for you. There's some stuff.
Terrific. Mari, what do you have to recommend?
I'm pretty sure I've recommended it before, but I don't care because it's on a new platform and it's more watchable. Girls 5 Eva is on Netflix. I don't care. I know I've recommended it before, but not a lot of people had Peacock at the time. And they got canceled after season 2. But now they're back for season 3 on Netflix. It is like my go-to, like, silly, when I need a break from all of this, it is my go-to silly show. I absolutely love it. It's so funny. And now it's on Netflix, which is more widely available to our listeners. I know y'all got at least a Netflix account. So I'm recommending it again. So
Well, I'm excited because production has begun on season 6 of the UK reality competition show Glow Up. So if you don't know it, makeup artists compete in various challenges. There's no monetary prize because it's English, British, I should say. But the winner gets a contract to assist a leading MUA at the end of the competition. Along the way, there is episode by episode prizes. So you might do makeup for an image in Rolling Stone or assist the makeup artist on an episode of The Crown, or have your prosthetics creature featured in Doctor Who, which is pretty
amazing. That's pretty great. That's pretty great.
So watch all 5 previous seasons on Netflix. Ding dong, darling.
Ding dong.
Katie, ding dong.
I have one more thing I forgot to add. If you are a Sherlock fan, Sherlock has been gone off of streaming for quite some time. I'm talking about the one with Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch. Just got re-released back to Hulu.
Oh, I just rewatched that like in January.
Okay, it's so just so in good. Case I just saw it and I was like, and so
it's here. I watched it on something else. I'm in a different country.
And since we're kind of piling on our recommendations, we talked about this off pod, but some of the international versions of Traitors is now available on Peacock. Sarah has been telling us about her side hustling of talking about all the international iterations of Traitors that I could never watch because I didn't have access to them. Now I have access and now I can go back and listen to Sarah. So Survivor, Traitors New Zealand, Traitors Australia season 2, Traitors UK season 2, now available on Peacock.
Is Traitors the new Survivor though?
It's hard. Survivor is a staple for our reality TV community, and we feel like nothing can replace Survivor. So
okay,
it's its own little lane. It's its own little niche.
Okay, good to know.
Yes. I mean, the interesting thing is that you get people on Traitors who would never in a million years want to or be cast on Survivor, because it's a social strategy without the suffering, just emotional suffering. At Crime Scene, we're not interested in your emotional suffering. We are eager to hear your feedback and suggestions for future episodes. You can follow Crime Scene on Twitter at Crime Scene RHAP, that's S-E-E-N, or email us at crimescenerhap@gmail.com.
We're also on TikTok at crime.scene and all other social media at Crime Scene Podcast. And please remember to subscribe to our feed by going to robhasawebsite.com/crimefeed. It makes a big difference.
Sure does. So, Katie, what do you have going on and where can the people find you?
Oh, same old, same old. I'm just kidding. Kimberly and I can both be found at Date with Dateline on Twitter and on Instagram. And we're just recapping this has been a very exciting season of Dateline specifically. And we also have CrimeCon coming up, which is our big convention where hopefully Dateline will be in attendance and we'll get to, you know, meet and greet with the hosts would be lovely. So that's what we have going on. Thank you for having me, by the way. Love being here.
It was Crime Scene New Orleans, not Crime Scene. What's it called? CrimeCon New Orleans, where Kimberly fell in the river, I think.
Oh, it definitely was. It was mm-hmm. one moment she was there wanting to somehow touch the Mississippi River. And the next mm-hmm. moment I look up and she's in the water, fully immersed. I don't know what happened. It was bizarre. It was just, she just slid right in. Like she was supposed to be there. The water was calling to her. It was mm-hmm. terrifying, but also hysterical.
Was it near that like memorial area near Cafe Dumont?
Yes. Yes. It's where the little slope is.
Yeah, the slope is. Yep.
Yes.
And all the rocks. We have, when we did RHAP New Orleans, all of the podcasters took a picture in front of there. And I was sitting there like, there is no guardrail here. Like, no, we are on the Mississippi.
You're going in, and there's stuff in that water. And then she insisted that we continue on our ghost tour without changing. She's like, no, I'm fine. And I'm like, no, you're not. This is
microbes.
Not going to be all right.
Microbes.
Microbes. I know. Yeah. I was like, bacteria. These clothes need to be burned. I don't want them in the room. Like, we're bagging them and in the trash can. We're done. So she's like, no, I think I can wash it. I threw it out.
Excellent.
Absolutely not. Oh. No.
And some time ago, Mari and I were on Rebecca Lavoie's Side Hustle, Other People's Problems,
which
I believe,
that.
Katie, you and Kimberly are going to be on or have been on.
Oh, we have been on, and we have also been on together against each other.
Yes.
Were you both against each other?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How did it go?
Fun.
Well, it nearly ended in divorce, I have to say.
Never.
Did it?
Never.
Is it out? No. Is that episode out?
Yes.
Oh, I'm going to listen to that.
It I didn't.
Can't. I love it.
It didn't.
It's so
it
fun.
It never could. It never
I love
could.
That. Yes. What a smart show that is. I tell her every time, I'm like, it's so fun. It's such an interesting idea, and they're so funny.
Yes. And Mari, what about you? Where can the people find you?
Well, of course, every week, me and Matt Scott talk about the highlights of the week in wrestling. We are this close, so close to WrestleMania. WrestleMania is less than a week away, and we are so excited. So if you want to follow us, we're going to try and do some vlogging and stuff while we're down there. You can go to the our new YouTube page. Go to youtube.com/@WrestlingRehapUp. That's youtube.com/@WrestlingRHAPUP. And we've been having just phenomenal guests on. So you don't even got to watch wrestling. You just got to listen to me and Matt be fun with our guests. It's amazing. Of course, also on the recap kickback, me and Chappelle are wrapping up. We wrapped up bracket season. We did a two-parter on the best Black TV show theme songs via bracket. So that was very, very fun. We then covered Freaknik, a documentary on Hulu, which was really good. If you liked our coverage with Chappelle of Woodstock 99, I think you'll really love me and Chappelle and our guest Ty talking about the Freaknik, the party that was never told. I want to say that's the subtitle. I don't know why they give all these documentaries these subtitles. But it's on Hulu. It's just a documentary, really good. And we had a great discussion about it. So you can go to recapkickback.com in order to subscribe. You can also follow Chappelle over on @recapkickback on Twitter. And then you can also go to the Recap Kickback YouTube page, youtube.com/@recapkickback. We had so, so much fun. And I really, really think our listeners will really love the coverage of Freaknik. So please go and check that out. What about you, Sarah?
Well, you can follow me if you'd like to do that @SarahCarradine on all the things. Over on Silent Podcasts, I wrapped up my coverage of Australian Survivor Titans versus Rebels with a vibes-only season overview with Chappelle. We had a great time over there. And your Aussie queens, Annabelle Fiddler and I, are covering season 2 of Alone Australia. It started on Wednesday night. It's fantastic. It takes where season one left off, jumps 10 paces ahead and starts there. It's extraordinary. Our guest for the episode covering the season premiere was original Titan Eden Porter, and this week our guest is original Rebel Eileen Chong. Naomi Calhoun and I are covering season 17 of Taskmaster UK. Our chat about episode one is in your feed right now, and I wasn't going to announce it, but seeing as we've been talking about it, I will be covering Les Traiteurs Québécois, The Traitors Quebec, with the winner of The Traitors New Zealand. So look out for that. And watch Traitors New Zealand before these episodes drop, because then otherwise you'll be spoiled. Next time on Crime Scene, it is our 100th episode. Woohoo! Woo-hoo. Mari, what are we covering for this milestone?
Next week, we are covering Crime Scene Berlin, The Nightlife Killer, with LaTanya Starks. We watched the previous properties, Crime Scene, The Cecil Hotel, and Crime Scene, Times Square. So this one is hotly anticipated. You can watch it on Netflix, subs or dubs. No dub shaming here.
No dub
shaming.
And
send us your comments and questions.
Thanks so much to Katie from A Date with Dateline podcast for joining us. Will from America for the theme music, and the whole RHAP team behind the scenes. Until next time, case
closed.
Gling, gling.